All right. Now, someone I really have looked forward to having on the show and read his books, and you look for the authority in the world of baseball broadcasting. He lives back in Rochester, New York, just a wonderful historian of the game and the beautiful baseball broadcast we love, and that is Kurt Smith. Kurt, nice to have you with us this morning.
Oh, great to be on with you. Thank you, and great to be with you.
Yeah, voices of the game. You know, I pick it up and just pick up any page and start reading about what you've written about, the first full-scale overview of baseball broadcasting, 1921 to the present. What got you interested in baseball broadcasting?
Well, you know, ever since I was little, and you mentioned I lived in Rochester, and I grew up in upstate New York, and we were then and now far removed from the nearest Major League Baseball franchise. And so to follow baseball, I had to do so through either radio and television. And I've always been entranced, I guess, by the English language. Churchill called words bullets that you use as ammunition. He didn't do play-by-play, but would have been aghast if he had. And, you know, you look at this and hear it, and it can be magical at times. And a good, a great even play-by-playman can make the game even more riveting than it was. And so I was very lucky to grow up in an era of the 1960s and 70s at a time when virtually every club had a surpassing personality behind the mic. And they could make baseball magical and transfixing. And so, you know, I said, well, geez, I write allegedly for a living. Why don't I try to, in essence, transpose and write for a generation that is perhaps not familiar with these artists and that has never had a book about them written. And no book had been written. It would amaze me when I went to the library, and there was no Google, of course, in the 1980s, but the Library of Congress told me flat out no one had ever written a book of this scope about baseball broadcasting. So it was virginal territory, so away I went.
Boy, and it's terrific. Kurt Smith is with us, and really a leading historian and a wonderful author. We're going to talk about other things, but I just want to let people know, Voices of the Game, the seminal book, as Kurt says, for all baseball broadcasting. I lived in Miami, Florida for a good part of my life. I was born in Brooklyn, and of course,
right.
Mel Allen and Russ Hodges and Red Barber and Connie Desmond, Frankie Frisch, Buddy Blattner. You know, these are names that that I listen to all the time, the Happy Felton Knothole Gang.
Right, Vin Scully.
And, of course, the great Vin Scully.
Yeah.
And I didn't get his autograph. I was 10 years old, and I tried to get it, and he walked away, and I've been intimidated by him ever since. So, but then moving, my point is this. You lived in Rochester. I then moved to Miami. So in Miami, we got Bob Elson and Milo Hamilton and Red Rush, and we had the White Sox games, and we eventually got Chuck Thompson, Bill O'Donnell on the Oriole games. But the fun of doing the listening to the broadcast would be at night. And and you'd go in the car radio, wherever you were, and to see what you could pick up. And I could get Lull Pass of the Houston Colt 45s, or I could get the Cincinnati Reds. And that was about it. What did you get in Rochester? Were you in a good area where you could pick up all sorts of broadcasts?
You know, I was in an almost pitch-perfect area. Bob Costas and I have talked about this. He grew up in Queens, and he would go out in his dad's car and the family convertible and listen to games at night. And so would I, or I'd go on the front porch. And on a good night, this is no exaggeration, and keep in mind in the 1960s, even after expansion, a good three-quarters of the teams in Major League Baseball lay within the upper right-hand quadrant, if you would, of the United States. And so on a good night, I could get probably 80% of all the games that were being played in Major League Baseball. And I could get Baltimore with Chuck Thompson and Boston with Kurt Gowdy and Ken Coleman and the great late Ned Martin. I could get Bob Elson in Chicago, Harry Carey, Joe Garagiola, Jack Buck in St. Louis. You name them, I got them. Ernie Harwell with that antebellum wonderful accent of his and the poetry that really stemmed from his DNA in Detroit. I'm thinking, you know, Wade Hoyt, of course, the only broadcaster in baseball history who ever broadcast in the past tense. But then he was only mirroring his teams who also played in the past tense in Cincinnati. And I got, in Atlanta, faintly, on the WSB, this is before the Superstation, Milo Hamilton, working my way up in Washington when they had a team. It was difficult, of course, to tell when they did have a team. They were that bad. I could get them. So really, on a good night, I could get almost all there was to get. And this helped me as well, because only because of geography was I able to write the book that I was able to do in Voices of the Game. If I'd have been brought up in New Mexico or Arizona or Colorado, I would not have had, through no fault of my own, that kind of first-hand or first-ear experience with the Voices of the Game. And I probably would not have been entranced and therefore led to do a book as I was growing up in upstate New York.
Boy, terrific. And one last thought before we get over to the Hall of Fame and what's going on this year, because I want to talk about the election. And, of course, the Giants are very interested in Dwayne Kuiper and how now they've divided the categories, which is new this year. But the one thing I love, and I kid John Miller about it, when there's a rain delay, they used to keep it there the whole time. They wouldn't throw it back to Marty Lurie and say, let's take some phone calls or do that. They'd keep it there the whole time. And Wade Hoyt put out a record that I have of rain delay stories and things like that. But when did that change? Ralph Kiner, Lindsey Nelson, they used to love the rain delay because they would keep there the whole time and just talk baseball, as I like to say.
Well, Wade Hoyt, in fact, I'm trying to remember the title. I think it was something quite simple like Wade Hoyt Stories in the Rain.
Yeah.
And that was all you needed to say.
Yeah.
Why did it change and when did it change? It changed in the last 15 to 25 years. Why did it change? For two reasons. Today you don't have the artists who can through the magic of the tongue, entrance a listener through the stories one after the other with the great detail and the anecdote and the local color. They can't do that today. They simply can't spin the story. And why did it change? Because today's listener doesn't have the attention span to listen to a Chuck Thompson tell a story, which might entail 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Or Mal Allen, particularly in his later years, would tell a story, and he could outlast any rain delay there was, and he would tell one story, and that would beat any rain delay. He would tell a story that would last probably an hour to an hour and a half. Exaggerate, but not by much. And those were the two reasons. And basically, it shifted back to the studio. Almost in no case today, sadly, do you have the game actually stay with the announcer and the announcer try to regale the audience, as it were, with the talent of the tongue.
Very good. Well, John will do it. I teased John. We had a rain delay coming up, and I.
Oh, Miller. Well, he's in a league of his own.
I mean,
not. You don't get simply John Miller, of course, when John Miller is in the booth. You get Chuck Thompson, which is a neat trick because John has been, of course, dead since the year 2000.
Right.
And you get Mel Allen, and you get Harry Carey, and you get Vin Scully, and you get him in English, Spanish, and Japanese.
Very true. I said, John, it'd be great to hear you. Just keep it there the whole time. He says, Marty, we'll be throwing it back to you shortly. So we had fun with that. All right, Kurt Smith is with us, a leading historian. And, Kurt, you're on the committee, are you not, that eventually votes, correct? So bring us up to date a little, if you don't mind, in what is going on now with this election coming up and how they've changed it.
Well, the Ford C. Frick Award was first given in 1978. It's for broadcast excellence. One person is elected per year. The only exception, 1978, and the committee couldn't decide between Red Barber and Mel Allen, so it inducted them both that first year. And ever since then, it's been one a year. And in the last 3 to 5 to 10 years, it has become, I would say, more of a popularity contest, and that is that announcers have been chosen, at least some have felt, more based upon, well, you know, do you know someone? Is someone popular with you? Is someone's, you know, are you friendly with someone's father-in-law? Have they been kind to you? Rather than looking at the historical overview, if you would, of all of the candidates that might be involved. And the result of that has been that the broadcasters that have been inducted have been either active or have been retired within the last 5 to 10 to 15 years. And as a result, there have been nominees and even people who have not been nominated but who should have, who broadcast very well 50 to 60 to 70 years ago, who have been totally forgotten. And I think the Hall felt that to have a Hall of Fame with a broadcast wing that was truly representative of the game, that you really ought to have a balance whereby the early pioneers of baseball were not ignored, were not forgotten, simply because they had the temerity to die and were therefore not alive today and were therefore not eligible to play golf today and do favors for nominees today. And so what happened was that much like, as I understand it, every third year, baseball executives are chosen and other people are chosen sort of on a revolving sort of basis at the Hall of Fame. The Hall hierarchy decided that that it would be very fair, eminently fair, in fact, if you did the same thing with the Hall of Fame broadcast voting. And so what they did was divide, as I understand it, divide the Hall voting into 3 eras, one of which would begin, I think, in 1985. And correct me if I'm wrong here, because I don't have the details in front of me.
That's the one we're talking about for Dwayne Kuiper would be that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, and that would be the nominees of today. And then there would be another one, I think, from 1984, dating back to what, the 1960s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be sort of the television age. And then from 1965 or 60, and all of the years before then, the heyday of radio. And so each of those eras would be represented once every 3 years. So, for example, you're talking about Dwayne Kuiper, who is one of my favorites, and I think merits Hall of Fame consideration, but then that's true of many of the very fine broadcasters in baseball. Dwayne would be considered once every 3 years, whereas, let's say, somebody from the era before the 1960s, Graham McNamee, for example, would be considered once every 3 years. Graham McNamee is not in the Baseball Hall of Fame. Now, how do you countenance that? Without Graham McNamee, there was no baseball on radio in the first 15 years of the advent of radio. And yet he's not in the Hall of Fame. This would be like a player's wing not having Ty Cobb.
Okay.
Dizzy Dean is not in the Hall of Fame. And yet he was the first star of the first network television series ever in any sport. The CBS television game of the week in the 1950s and 60s. He's not in. This would be like not having Babe Ruth in the players' wing. So there are glaring omissions in the broadcast wing that I think many in the Hall of Fame thought really were tarring and staining, if you would, the reputation of the broadcast committee. And I think this is the overarching reason that the Hall acted as it did.
Yeah, very good. Kurt Smith is with us, explained it perfectly. They call it the high tide era, and that's through the mid-80s through today. The living room era, which is the mid-50s to the early 80s, and you described that. And, of course, the broadcasting dawn era, which would be McNamee. And that's from the origins of baseball broadcasting through the early 50s. So, you explained it perfectly. And Dwayne, of course, the Giants are very interested in this. And as you said, you can vote at, I guess it's done through Facebook now.
And
you,
that's right.
You go to facebook.com/baseballhall, and you can vote once a day. And then the top three get involved with you and the committee. And, and there's 10 on it. And then do you meet personally to do this, or is it a mail vote? How do you do that?
No, the way it works is that you've got 10 finalists, and three of the finalists are chosen by the public.
Right.
And that way will continue through perpetuity, I think, because it's worked very well. In fact, of all the Halls of Fame, as I understand it at least, they have followed baseball's lead in taking their votes public, because they've seen how enormously successful baseball's vote has been. There have been votes, if memory serves me correctly, of up to 70 to 80 to 90,000 votes being cast by the public for the Frick Award. I think you've had people voting, frankly, multiple times, which is probably why the criteria are more stringent now, as to only be able to be, pardon me, to vote once. But public can and will choose three finalists, and then the hall will choose the other seven, and you'll have the 10, and then the voting will commence on that. So that will remain, I think, unchanged. The only difference will be, again, that instead of every year a certain candidate being eligible, it'll be every third year.
Okay, but do you, and you explained it perfectly, do you meet as a group to make
the
final?
No, we really don't. We, pardon me, we sometimes convene by telephone, in twos or threes. I think if you looked at the overall committee, and I don't have the membership in front of me.
I do.
But you've got, you've got the Hall of Fame inductees, the living members, and I'm not sure how numerous that is.
Let me give you the list just to refresh your memory. Marty Brenneman, Jerry Coleman, Gene Elston, Joe Garagiola, Jaime Harin, Milo Hamilton, Tony Kubek, Denny Matthews, Tim McCarver, John Miller, Philo Ramirez, Vince Scully, Lon Simmons, Bob Uecker, Dave Van Horn, and Bob Wolf, and then Bob Costas, Barry Horn, Ted Patterson, and yourself.
Okay, well, that's about 20.
Yeah.
I tried to keep up with you, but I never was a math major.
You're doing fine, trust me.
I barely got through on English. But so there's about 20, and we have never attempted to do a conference call with 20. It would be too cumbersome, and I think it becomes too political in that sense, because people with their candidates and some surrogates are more effective than others in pleading a cause, and we don't want it to become a case of a surrogate browbeating or getting people to vote his way. We want the candidates to get in on the facts, because we think that that's the best criteria. And we do talk in twos or threes. I mean, I would talk each year to Ernie Harwell, because who better to go to for advice? I mean, I would have a pretty good idea for whom I was going to vote, but I would always be intrigued in terms of getting Ernie's input. He wouldn't always tell you who he would be voting for, but you would get, a good idea of which way he was leaning. Or Bob Wolf. I mean, my goodness, Bob Wolf is the longest running television sportscaster in the country. I mean, who wouldn't value his friendship? And I do. So I always try to talk with him and get his idea. And so we'll talk in twos or threes or just one-on-one, and I'll do so in a series of phone calls just for new friendships, if nothing else. And this is how we do things, I think.
All right, Kurt, thank you for being with us. I'm going to put in the good word for Dwayne Kuiper. As I said, I can listen to him read the phone book, and he uses fewer words per minute than anybody. But you get the idea. And I also want to put in a good word for pregame radio talk show hosts in baseball. I think we need a category.
okay. Just call Cooperstown, New York. They're always willing to listen.
I get teased about that a lot. I appreciate it. Kurt, thank you so much. Very informative, and I know the fans appreciate it. Now they understand what is taking place. And whoever they like, we hope it's Dwayne Kuiper, but it can be voted in top three get in, and you guys pick the other seven, or the hall does, and then you vote on. Kurt, thank you so much. A pleasure. You're welcome anytime.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. That is a wonderful baseball historian, and he's the expert on broadcasting. That is Kurt Smith. All right.